First, Wisconsin's juvenile justice system has been controversial in recent years. The state's youth prisons, the Lincoln Hills School for Boys and Copper Lake School for Girls, have been the subject of reports of abuse and misconduct by inmates and staff, as well as unsafe working conditions for staff. Now the system is under increased scrutiny, and experts and lawmakers are looking at ways to change it. That includes looking at other states around the country as potential models for a better juvenile justice system. Molly Beck covers politics and state government for the Wisconsin State Journal. She's been following the uncertain future of the state's youth prisons. Molly, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there are a lot of different thoughts about what could change, but do you get the sense, talking to different stakeholders, that people want some kind of change, whatever that might be?
Sure. The lawmakers I've talked to, they've all agreed that they're not supportive of what's going on currently, whether that's the model of juvenile incarceration in Wisconsin's fault, or, you know, the staffing issues at Lincoln Hills, or, you know, a number of other reasons that there are so many issues that people hear about at the youth prison there in Irma. But I think a prevailing idea when I talk to everybody who's kind of engaged in this conversation is a regional facility closer to Milwaukee might make sense if they can figure out how to do that. One concern that some lawmakers brought up at the time, that the state consolidated its youth prisons and sent all of its serious juvenile offenders to the Northwoods campus there, was that, you know, a lot of these kids were coming from the Milwaukee area, and they were going to be now about 4 hours away from home. And a lot of juvenile justice experts say that that's not going to, you know, help those kids rehabilitate.
And I understand some lawmakers and others are looking at other states for inspiration, and Missouri is one state that's come up. What is different there? What do they do in Missouri?
Right. Yeah. So Missouri is kind of considered to be a sort of standard of juvenile incarceration, and a big reason is because they don't have these big, you know, several hundred inmate facilities like Wisconsin has, for example. What they have are 32 small facilities that generally don't have any more than 20 or 30 inmates. And for the most serious inmates, that would be comparable to the kind of inmates that are at Lincoln Hills. I think it's about 10. And so it's a very small facility. It's probably more staff per inmate than the larger facilities. And for the less serious juvenile offenders, the facilities resemble more like a college or a small school or something. I don't think you would identify it as a prison if you looked at them.
It sounds like a big path to get from where we are now to something like that. And what would be involved in making a change like that?
Right. There would have to be a lot. The law would have to be changed. There's currently a state law that requires a juvenile prison to be in the area that it is right now. So they would have to change the law. They would probably have to, Milwaukee County, if they wanted to, you know, bring some of those kids home, closer to home, they would need to find a way to fund it. I talked to Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley, and he said, well, that's his goal, to find a way to have, you know, the serious juvenile offenders closer to Milwaukee. There's no funding for it currently. And the way state law is set up, the most serious juvenile offenders have to be in the state's care, basically. So a number of laws would have to change. I think funding is a major issue. And there's also this, you know, federal investigation that's kind of looming over all of this that might, you know, force changes or prevent changes from happening it still goes along.
We had this dramatic moment a couple of years back, Molly, where the state's Department of Justice raided this Department of Corrections facility over all these complaints and accusations of abuse, things like that. What are we hearing now from the Department of Corrections, now under new management, about what has changed since then at Lincoln Hills?
So, yeah, 2 years ago there was a raid of investigators, and that followed about a year of investigation into allegations of abuse and all sorts of potential crimes there. And since then, I think about every person who's, you know, been in charge of the Division of Juvenile Corrections has been removed or resigned or retired. And, you know, the new secretary has, you know, changed the way staffing patterns. He has changed the way medication is distributed. He's changed, you know, the kinds of staff members that are dealing with the inmates there. I think they have a much more complicated process to review, you know, any staff injuries or inmate injuries. It sounds like, you know, they're attempting to have a lot more scrutiny of what's going on there. But they're also dealing with a lot of staffing shortages. So that's been a big hurdle for them to kind of carry out what they want to do there, because they can't keep, you know, the place fully staffed.
Molly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Molly Beck, reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, where she covers politics and state government. We continue our conversation about juvenile corrections in Wisconsin. Jeffrey Roman joins us now. He works for the Public Policy Institute as the benchmark coordinator for the Milwaukee Brighter Futures Initiative. He's also an organizer for Youth Justice Milwaukee. In his work, he advocates for better outcomes in the criminal justice system and other areas. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, we heard about efforts to change Lincoln Hills there and a possible road to the future. You've been calling for shutting the place down and coming up with a new system. Why are you calling for an end to what we have now?
Yeah, so I think in terms of Youth Justice Milwaukee, our stance is that there's no reforming Lincoln Hills and Copper Lakes. It cannot be reformed given the investigations that are going, given the almost daily now, if certainly weekly, things that we're hearing from the facilities. It's in no shape to be reformed. It has to be shut down, and our system has to be reimagined and revisioned. And Molly, you know, lifted up some of the key points that we're saying: closer to the home, more accessible to family and community resources, smaller, more therapeutic settings that aren't as institutionalized, but offer the supports that young people need, depending on their risk factors, so that they can actually rehabilitate and eventually reenter to the society.
Now, a case that's been made for the kids being sent to Lincoln Hills, these are offenders who maybe are too far gone in a way. They're too potentially violent to be treated at a smaller scale facility to be subject to rehabilitation. What do you say to those concerns?
Well, so there are a number of ways to look at that, and even things that we know that first and foremost, the number of young people that are being sent to Lincoln Hills and Copper Lakes, many of them don't reach the threshold, the risk factor where they have to be behind a secure setting. Certainly for those who do need to be behind there, who need secure placement, there needs to be facilities for those young people to be able to get the resources and supports that they need. However, again, those need to be closer to home, accessible to family and community supports. I mean, again, more smaller residential. It shouldn't be 40, 50, 60, 100 plus young people. It should be 15 to 20, at most 25 young people that are with a very, very close staff to young person ratio that are providing them the real needs, the real supports that they need.
Let's talk about that close to home issue. We've got the state's most populated county, of course, Milwaukee County, over there in southeastern Wisconsin, and this facility hours north of there. Why is that an important factor here, that distance?
I think the distance just underscores, you know, the way that our system is broken. We know, and the research tells us, that having young people who need to be in secure placements or behind bars or locked away for whatever reasons, the chances of them rehabilitating more are higher if they have access to their community and supports from their community and their family members. And you're right, Milwaukee incarcerates the most young people. Sending them for 3, 4, 5 hours away isn't good on the young people. It's definitely not good on their families, who are needed, or a crucial part of their rehabilitation. So that's the issue, first and foremost, is that if we really want our young people to get the supports they need to be able to have access to the family and the community supports in the communities that they're ultimately going to be returning back to.
It could be a tall order, changing from what we have now, these correctional facilities up north, to more and smaller and closer to Milwaukee institutions. Expensive, logistically difficult. Is this something that the state can really tackle?
I believe so, and it's an all-hands-on-deck kind of approach. We know that the majority of the dollars that send young people from Milwaukee to the state, those dollars come from Milwaukee County residents through our tax dollars. That's about $100,000 a year per young person that's there, that's coming from Milwaukee County. And so we were a bit smarter on how we use those dollars, and we actually invested those dollars in the resources that exist here in our communities, because they do exist here in our communities, and scaling those programs, we will be able to have the spaces and the supports that we need for those young people.
Jeffrey Roman is with us. He works for the Public Policy Institute. We're talking about models for juvenile justice reform here in Wisconsin. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Is this part of your story or your family's story? Have you been affected by incarceration and the juvenile justice system or worked in that system? Tell us what you think about this issue. And for anyone, how would you like to see Wisconsin treat young offenders, youth who have committed crimes, maybe serious crimes? Where do you think these facilities should be located in the state? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Jeffrey Roman of the Public Policy Institute. He's also an organizer for Youth Justice Milwaukee. We're talking about efforts to change the juvenile justice system in Wisconsin. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. If you work in criminal justice or you've been affected or your family has been affected by incarceration, we'd love to hear from you. Do you want to see reform in Wisconsin's youth justice system? How should the state approach young people who have committed serious crimes? What changes do you want to see at Lincoln Hills? Do you want to see it closed and replaced by something else? If so, what? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers. Tom is on the line in Menominee Falls. Tom, hi.
Hi. I would like to see that Lincoln Hill would be staffed properly and the people trained that are going to work there so they don't have to put up with the abuse and everything. And I'm getting a little tired of people saying they have to be close to their families when their families didn't take care of them in the first place, and they're the main problems. That taxpayer money is going to waste. Let's knock this nonsense off and get it staffed properly and educated properly, the workers.
Tom, thanks for the call. He's saying fix Lincoln Hills. No reason to get kids closer to their families. The families, he says, part of the problem, Jeffrey.
Well, the research refutes that. The research says that families that have access to their families and connections to their community, that they're also going to come back. They recidivate less, and they have higher chances of rehabilitation.
Tom, thanks for the call. We'll go next to James on the line in Milwaukee. James, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I attended Ethan Allen back when I was a juvenile. I went to a voluntary boot camp that was located up in Camp Douglas. It was on a military base. The boot camp, I think it, you know, it's voluntary for one. You earn your early release or whatever, but it taught the cadets how to hold themselves accountable for their actions. And it also had like a community-based part of the program. You know, it got the kids out, learn different things. Kids that were able to earn their HSC went and worked on the military base during the day and stuff like that. And I think they need to bring the boot camp back, or programs like that or whatever. The drill instructors that were there, you know, it taught everybody to work as a team and also learn the kids how to hold themselves accountable.
Gotcha. James, thanks for that call. He mentioned being at Ethan Allen, the now closed facility, which was closer to Milwaukee, and then alternatives to that kind of program, and in this case, a boot camp. Jeffrey, your thoughts?
Yeah, so we know that there are examples that work. For example, the Girl Academy here in Wisconsin is a model here. It's a smaller facility that it's a little bit closer to some of the communities, particularly Milwaukee, and that's a specialized workforce development of, you know, urban agriculture type of a residential kind of setting for young people who need to be in a secure setting that has supports for resources. And so whether it's boot camp or a smaller kind of specialized setting, we agree that those are models that are effective and that they work.
James, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Gil on the line in Madison. Gil, hi.
Hi. So earlier in the program, the Missouri model was discussed, and there's actually a bill that's not been able to make it out of being introduced into a committee. It's in a committee, but it's not being considered, that would call for a study of the Missouri model with the goal of having the state figuring out how they could adopt the Missouri model. It was proposed by Evan Goyke from Milwaukee, who's been working hard on these issues for a long time. I just wondered if your guest knew about that and what he might say about the prospects of that being a step towards changing things.
Gil, thanks for the call. Jeffrey, the Missouri model and efforts in the state legislature here.
Yeah, so the model in Missouri we think is a good starting point, definitely for discussion at the state level, and are thankful to the legislators who have had the insight and the will to be able to advance some of the options that do exist looking at other states and areas that's doing this work. It's a good model, a good starting point, but, you know, we think that it's only the starting point, that there are actual better models that could come from doing a real investigation into what the actual models that do exist, starting with the Missouri model.
Thanks for that call, Gil, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Jeffrey Roman with the Public Policy Institute and Youth Justice Milwaukee, looking at efforts to change the juvenile justice system here in Wisconsin. There have been years of problems at the Lincoln Hills Correctional Facility, people looking to change that in various ways. So, Jeffrey, you mentioned other models apart from Missouri. Can you talk more about what kind of models you see out there proposed or in place around the country that work better than what we have here?
There are a number of models that do exist. We look at there's some models in Pennsylvania where there are actually residential treatment centers and smaller kind of residential homes that exist. There is a model in, I believe, Boston, Massachusetts called ROCA, R-O-C-C-A, that works with young people before and after they've been incarcerated and as alternatives to incarceration, where they're working with them and they actually provide not only the residential kind of supports that they need, but also provide the specialized kind of workforce development and education things as a part of their rehabilitation. And so those are the type of models that we're looking at, and as we are doing our research and being diligent and being able to lift up the models that have been found effective in other parts of the country. And again, are appreciative of the legislators and those at the state and at the local level who are doing the same with us and working with us to identify and advance the legislation needed to be able to make those happen.
And Jeffrey, we're talking about, you know, how the state or counties deal with youth who have committed serious crimes. How about efforts that would take place before that, maybe between a minor offense and that serious crime, or maybe even before the first offense, to prevent this being a problem in the first place?
Yeah, so we believe that there are organizations and resources that exist that, if skilled, and if we were, if we were to use the dollars that we spend on incarcerating just one child a year, one young person, and reinvesting those dollars to scale those organizations and those resources and programs that do work, we would be able to provide the resources that young people, based on the risk factor that they're at, whether those are in the prevention end, whether those are for low to moderate risk young people who just need, you know, additional case management or kind of crisis support. Ultimately is what it is. Intensive monitoring, those kind of things. There are resources that do exist. Some of them are here in our backyards. They're happening very, very small scale. Others are happening at a larger scale in other communities and other states. But they do exist. And if we can be more creative and more intentional about how we use the dollars that we ultimately have control of for our young people, we will be better effective in improving outcomes in the juvenile justice system.
Now, a recent editorial in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel agreed with a lot of what you're saying, but also said, hey, for some of the more serious but still nonviolent crimes, car theft, right now young people aren't being held accountable enough. The punishments aren't strict enough. What would you say to that?
I would say that depends on how you look at the situation and who we're talking about. We make the assumption that for every young person that makes that type of mistake, that the conditions and the factors that have led to them doing that are all the same in our unison, and they're not. However, given what is happening in our communities, again, and I'll continue to drive this point, there are organizations and individuals and resources that exist that are helping those young people, that are meeting them where they are and that are providing for them and making sure that they don't following those in that path again. And again, if we are reinvesting dollars to be able to support those things that we know are effective at work, we can begin to be able to address those. To say that we're not doing enough, there's always more to do, but we are doing some things, and again, we have to be able to support those things and scale those things that have been found effective to be able to address the issues that we have in our community.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jake is with us in Waukesha. Jake, hi.
Hi, how's it going? I was wondering if the speaker has heard of Ross Green and his work in Maine.
Is that something you're familiar with, Jeffrey?
I'm sorry, what was that in May?
Ross Green in Maine? What is? Just give us a nutshell version, Jake. What's going on?
Well, he's got some really good books. I'm a special education teacher, so I reference his work when it comes to working with students with emotional behavioral disabilities. But he's working on reforming the juvenile delinquent system in Maine. He's got some really kind of neat ideas on how to do that and doing it in a caring way and in an effective way.
Jake, thanks for that call. Jeffrey, can you talk about treatment for emotional and behavior issues that Jake had referenced there?
Yeah, so I'm not familiar specifically with the model that he's referencing and the author of the book that he's referencing, but we do know that there are more therapeutic options and models that are available. We are really familiar and really excited about the cognitive behavioral therapy programs that exist here in Milwaukee and across the state. The more trauma-informed care and trauma-informed work that's happening here in Milwaukee and Milwaukee County and across the state as well. And we've had some success in getting some of our leaders and legislators at the state to actually look into those different models, particularly around the cognitive behavioral therapy and the resources, mental health and behavioral health resources that are needed for young people and their families.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jake. Briefly, as we wrap up, Jeffrey, are you optimistic that things are going to change for the better?
You know, I don't want to say that I'm not optimistic. I'm optimistic in that we have young people who have been incarcerated and their families of young people and parents of young people who are and who have been and are currently incarcerated. We have advocates, local and national, that are working with us, who are working with us to be able to become advocates and are learning the way, learning how to have conversations with their legislators and county and state leaders around this issue. So I'm hopeful in the sense that we're mobilizing our community and we're giving them the skills and the tools and the resources to be better advocates for themselves, their young people.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Jeffrey Roman with the Public Policy Institute and Youth Justice Milwaukee talking about youth justice reform here in the state.